Is this distracting if we do this the whole time? Because it's actually a very comfortable mask.
I know. You know what? The way I feel about Halloween and costumes is kind of the way I feel about life and like the clothes I choose. It's got to be comfortable or forget about it.
Forget about it.
Like, I'm not going to wear this costume where I have all this makeup on
my face.
No
way, man.
Where like you can't like touch anything or you like have to wear like super high heels or something. Like, that's just not fun.
Yeah.
But this is fun.
One time I went as Braveheart and I had makeup on my face and it was all smeared because I was drunk and stupid.
Yes, I remember that night.
Remember that one time I got drunk and stupid?
Just that once. Yes, I remember that one time. And I feel the same way. I've had a lot of makeup and clothes and I've worn wigs.
What's
and
your favorite Halloween costume you've ever had?
Well,
it's the Y2K bug, isn't it?
No, it's not.
She went as a Y2K bug and she was like this little bug and it was dumb.
That was dumb. It was dumb. I was Dorothy about like 5 years in a row. So I'm going to go with that.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll jump in. There were some people who welcome everybody.
Welcome to Happy Sean, Halloween. Peggy, Jennifer, Lindsay, and Allison.
And you guys, Halloween is obviously tomorrow. It's not today. But, you know, Halloween is really the only day of the year where you are given permission to be like a kid and to don't miss it. Meaning that you don't have to be Catwoman or Batman, but, you know, maybe wear some bright orange and black, or maybe hand out candy to people, or,
it's,
you know,
like that part in Mr. Mom where Michael Keaton is mad at Terry Garr?
Uh-huh.
For leaving on a business trip, and he's like, there's only so many Halloweens, and these kids are going to outgrow it. Meanwhile, he's wearing a jail costume.
I know.
And she says, you haven't looked like you've outgrown it. He's like, I admit it, I like Halloween.
And so do I. So we both do. And so this year, our youngest, so our oldest isn't really dressing up anymore.
She's coming home from
high school,
doing her homework, and not celebrating Halloween at all.
Because they're going to do something. They're going to watch movies or something. They're not dressing up anymore. She's 14. My middle daughter is dressing up, but they're all like, perfectly, you know, they're all like, it's like seven of them and they're all like different M&Ms. So they're all looking the same, you know, that kind of phase. And then our youngest is got a great costume. She's a Day of the Dead girl, but she's going with her friends this year. So Todd and I are like, please, can we go with you down our street so we can wear our masks?
Yeah.
And then we got to come in and I think we're going to watch Silence of the Lambs while wearing our masks.
Yeah, and you're going to be scared.
Yeah.
She doesn't think Silence of the Lambs is scary.
I don't get scared of that movie. Psychological thriller. I'm more interested in what's going on in people's brains in that movie. Like, even like Jodie Foster, like her history. And
what about that one part, though, where she's in the basement?
That didn't scare me the way it
scared you. She's in the basement, and she can't see, and she's got the gun pointed.
I know, that bothers
and he's
you.
Got the glasses on, mm-hmm. and she's in green.
I know. All right, let's go. So,
I say we keep on talking about Halloween.
Let's not. Let's do the first question. And somebody, the first question.
I'm just realizing people's reactions as they see it. There's
Hi,
a new,
sweetie.
There's a new person.
I know. There's a sweetie
Kristen's
on.
Kristen's baby girl.
I like it when there's kids that I can see too.
We have some things to share, but let's start with questions.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Anna, you're the one who wrote us the question this morning, right?
Yes.
I'm going to unmute.
Yeah.
Anna, you got a big one.
Hi.
You got a big, let's see if we can help you.
I know. Hold on. I'm just going to go upstairs real quick. Okay. My husband just came home and it's about his sister.
Oh, so, yes.
Do you want us to go to a different question and come back to you?
No. I'm good. I'm just kind of running away. Okay. We both work from home, but so it makes it tricky sometimes. So.
Tell me about it.
Oh, my heart was like pounding. I just don't want to cause family drama. So what happened, I mean, I wrote a long question. By the way, I'm in my walk-in closet.
I love it. You got to find your little spaces, wherever they are.
Yeah. So what happened was that I was reading the Brené Brown book and, you know, about dehumanizing and like quarrels, confrontations, and so, which was really timely. And just to give you a little background on my sister-in-law, she's awesome. I love her. She had gotten me this like package. I told you, Kathy, in the email. So where we can, it was like a online counselor, which was more like a women's group, online women's group. And I got to meet all of them. They're in Vermont. I'm in Rhode Island. So it's not that far. And it was awesome. And one of the things that the woman always said, Andrea, who ran the group, was like, you know, this feels good to me. And she would always say that. And sometimes that would bother me. And I'd be like, Yeah, but it feels good to you, but have you thought about the collective? Which I feel like that's what a lot of Brené Brown book is about, you know, I think, unless I'm misinterpreting it. So then my sister-in-law, like literally every single time except Christmas when we go up there and I make plans, she always cancels. Like every time she's like, oh, this came up, oh, blah, blah, whatever. So she has four kids and they don't have like a lot of money. So she was really anxious about this wedding that we have coming up, family wedding, because kids aren't invited. And so I was like, oh, my mom will watch them, who's coming from New Jersey. So it's like a 4.5 hour drive to Massachusetts where the wedding is. And she was like, okay, that's great. Everything's settled. The wedding's next week. And she just called me on Sunday, like 5 times. I was like, oh, whatever. I answered. She's like, oh, I don't think, you know, it doesn't feel good to me that your mom is going to watch the kids anymore. She's like, I think Lee, her husband, is just going to stay home and not watch the kids. Watch the kids and your mom doesn't have to come up. She's like, it just doesn't feel good. She's like, and that feels good to me. And like, I knew she was saying that because that's the language we use in like that group. So it was kind of annoying because it was almost like, okay, now you can't say anything because you know I'm using the proper language. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I was really pissed because it's also my niece's 10th, 11th birthday. So my sister changed the birthday plans. My mom took the day off of work and all these things don't matter. Like my family's so easygoing. Like they were like, whatever, who cares? But the point is like, I get it doesn't feel good to you, but like there's like other people who changed their life, their whole program around, you know? So it's like, I get that language of like, how does this feel to you? But like, I'm still kind of annoyed. So then I went back to the book because I was in and out of the book yesterday. Sunday was like really rainy here. And then crazy enough, Brené's like, she's like, no, sometimes family have arguments. And she's like, when you look deeper, she's like, what is the intention? And maybe the intention was for connection. And blah, blah. And I was like, that's what it was. Like my daughter, I only have one, you know, and I make such a point for her to see her cousins, my sister's kids. Like they stay at my house for like 4 weeks in the summer. I make the drive to New Jersey at least, you know, once a month. And I would do the same thing. It's the same drive from here to Vermont than it is to New Jersey, but it's always like a thing. So it's annoying. And I haven't said anything because like, and I don't think I'm getting mad. So I'm like, I don't want to be mad. I think that's what it is. It's like now my daughter is going to stay here. My mom's just going to come to Rhode Island because it's easier. It's only one kid, but it's like, now she doesn't get to see her cousins. And like, we had all these plans. Like we were going to go to a museum on Sunday, like all of us. And so now we're not doing that because, so it's just frustrating. And I think that's what it is. The intention of like, but I don't know how to address it because even last night when it came up at dinner, we went to my in-laws, my mother-in-law was like, well, like she got super defensive. And I was like, oh, it's okay. You know, it's no big deal. Like my husband brought it up because he knows that I'm really pissed. So he's kind of in the middle. Which he's not, because I haven't made a big deal out of it. I guess if I did it, he would be in the middle. And I know he would take my side, which he usually does. He always does. But it's like, I don't want to do it. Like, him and his sister don't have a great relationship as it is. So it's like, I don't want to cause more riff. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't, like, do I just let it go? And then part of me, like, you know, the ego part of me, like, is like, you know what? I'm just going to not make plans with you anymore. I don't care. I'll see you at Christmas. Whatever. Right. And then the other part of me is like, well, that's not right. You know, like, because I'm not addressing the issue. I'm just.
Right. All right. Great question. And I know exactly, even though, again, your situation is very unique, but I can share something that might be helpful. Did you have something or are you okay
no,
with
you
me going
start,
first?
But I'm going to mute her because this sounds.
Sure. That's fine. So Anna, he's going to mute you. So what I've found in my own personal experience and with people I'm working with is when people do that kind of thing, like this is how I feel, or they change plans or they cancel because it's in the best interest of their life, or they disappoint people because they have to take care of themselves. It's totally fine. Like I'm with you that she, even though it's annoying that she's using the therapeutic language, people do that with me all the time too. And Todd always gets an earful, like I'll have people that I'm talking to about something and then they'll spend like 15 minutes coaching me about it. And not that I'm above coaching, but a lot of times they're teaching me something that maybe I had told them and then they're teaching it back. And then you're kind of like, okay, I know this, you know, but you got to breathe through that and let them say what they need to say because they're just trying to honor themselves. But what I found is that it's not so much about what the outcome is, Anna. It's about your ability to say what you feel. And this is really important. It's not that you have to be angry or not angry. It's not that you have to either change it or not change it. You just need to share your perspective. And I'll give a personal example so you know. I have a real, this has actually happened with a few really good girlfriends, but I had a few really good girlfriends, still good girlfriends of mine. And they were making choices that weren't so great all the time. And they would always have these reasons why. And a lot of people around them would be like, oh, don't you understand? And yeah, that's why they're doing that. And I would just sit and be so frustrated with them because I didn't feel that their choices were great because they, like your experience, they were hurting other people. So what I had to do was figure out a way to tell them how I felt, to honor myself without an intention to change the outcome. Meaning I wasn't telling them so then they would change and I could say, see, I told you so, and I was right. I told them so I could relieve myself from the pressure of my own experience. And then whatever transpired after that, I let go of. Because the thing that your sister-in-law needs to understand, not about the whole world, this is not about being general with her, it's just about you, is when she cancels plans because she feels that she should, she has every right to, but that there is a ripple effect and that you're disappointed. And you can even, you don't have to be mad. You don't have to say, I'm angry with you or this is going to cause a problem. You say, you're totally honest and you say, you know what? I respect what you're saying. And I actually recognize your words because we learned it in that, you know, therapy thing that we did. But I'm so disappointed because I really wanted for my daughter, because don't make it about your daughter. Don't say my daughter's really disappointed and then pan it off on her.
Own it.
Own it. I was really looking forward to having my daughter spend time with your cousins and my mom was excited to come up and that's disappointing. I totally respect your decision. I'll honor it, but I want you to know that I'm disappointed. And then you have to let her absorb that. Not sit in it where you're doing the passive aggressive like, well, fine, but I'm disappointed, but just, and then you're going to end that conversation if it be on the phone or whatever with a, I love you. And can we try this again another time? Good. Okay, good. Because I really do want to see you. You have to crack your heart open, Anna. You have to be so vulnerable with yourself, knowing that she may cancel again. But what you're not going to do is betray yourself. Okay? Because that's the pain you're feeling is the self-betrayal of I'm not saying anything. You can't change her, but you can be completely honest without getting mad. And everybody who's being defensive around it, it's because they don't want to talk about the discomfort. And so that's my experience. So go ahead.
So I'm going to say something probably similar to Kathy, but a little bit differently. And coincidentally, and Sean knows this because he's in my men's group, and we just did a session on candor. And candor is just a fancy word for being a truth teller. And we talked about the idea of withholding. And right now, Anna, you're in a place where you are withholding something that's building up and frustration towards your sister-in-law. The first question you need to ask is, how big of a deal is this? And because you're asking this of us, it seems like it's not one of those things that's going to just roll off your back. This is going to build up, and you're going to end up, I think, resenting. And the thing about withholding is it's really an energy depleter. And sometimes we withhold because we think it's not worth it or we think we don't want to hurt somebody else's feelings. And this is a kind of a tricky part. What I'm going to try to do is compress what we talked about in this men's group that took 2 hours into like 2 minutes. So this may not translate, but I'm going to do my best. When we withhold information, which you're doing, these are feelings that you have based upon your sister-in-law's pattern continuing to do what's best for her without regards to impacting somebody else. That's a pattern. It's not a one-time shot. So what happens is you're going to either energetically or deliberately withhold something from her. You're going to withhold love. You're going to withhold information. You're not going to be telling you the complete truth. And then you're going to project your judgments of your sister-in-law onto her. When in fact, and this is kind of the tricky part because this takes a lot of work. It's the idea of you need to, are there times when you don't have a complete regard to how everybody else is going to handle whatever situation as you do it? So in other words, what I'm saying is we are human beings that sometimes become judgmental, and that is And there's times when I judge people out there. So what I'm going to invite you to do is, if you can find a loving way to do this and in a compassionate way to do this, and I don't know if you have the relationship with your sister-in-law, maybe this is just about you and your husband and you guys needing to be unified, and it doesn't even affect your sister-in-law because you know that nothing's going to change her. But if you have the ability to have a authentic conversation with your sister-in-law, and you say something to the effect of, you know, sister-in-law, I want to reveal myself to you because I really want to connect with you and have a really healthy relationship. And I need to tell you that this is about my judgments, and you're owning your judgments about what's happening in the situation. And it's with the intention of connecting, and then say that, like, I'm owning my judgment of what it is. And I don't really know your situation. Maybe she has a very valid reason why she wants. And then you start thinking about what's possible. Like, is it possible that she's doing this with the highest good of her kids? Because her kids are really, really sacred, and she gets scared when they might not be in the best situation. In other words, just look at it through a different lens, because we all look through the world through our own lenses, and just try to kind of displace yourself out of it. But the tricky part is, this can come off, and this could end up being a horrible idea unless you can do it from a compassionate, loving place. And to Kathy's point, after you kind of say your spiel, you need to be able to listen without judgment in a full body way. And it's a very tricky thing to do. But the problem with your withhold is it is an energy depleter, and it's going to build up, and you might build up resentment towards her, and you might build up resentment towards your husband because he doesn't have your back. So I do feel like you need to kind of somehow lovingly flesh this out.
So two things I want to add to what Todd said, and then we'll see how you're feeling. Sometimes, you know, like Todd was just saying, you have to say to her, I want to reveal myself to you. You're probably not going to use those words. The language that I just used recently, and this is interesting from, because you're reading Brené Brown, in her In Daring Greatly, the language she uses is, the story I'm telling myself is. And I just used that recently with a girlfriend. There was this money issue that was going on with our work, and I had to talk to her about this challenge with money. And I started by saying, okay, let's start this conversation. The story I'm telling myself about this is that blah, 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 blah. And then you're owning that mm-hmm. you may not be right.
Right.
But the story I'm telling myself is that maybe you're unsure, you know, whatever your story is that you're telling yourself. And it opens that conversation. And then the second thing is, as Todd just said, you know, it may not be important enough to tell her because it may not change her. Your intention is not to change her. Mm-hmm. Your intention is just to share of yourself. Healing doesn't come from changing the outcome. Healing comes from speaking your truth. So it's not about you either win or lose. It's about, regardless of outcome, this is a very Buddhist philosophy, you're detached from the outcome. The healing comes from saying what you believe. Okay.
Unmuting. All right. What spoke to you? What didn't?
No, I mean, I love it. I think it's really great. And I think she'll be really receptive. I mean, she's like, we actually have a really great relationship. Like, I don't have a, you know, it's just tricky. It's just, and I know that she doesn't cancel unintentionally. And I know that, like, and that's the other thing, like, I think I might wait until I see her in person, because yeah. She does have four kids, so she's so busy. So I don't want her to hear something that I'm not saying, you know?
Yes.
I think it would be better.
I would definitely encourage you to do this. Yeah. Put yourself in a position of succeeding, and an email and a phone conversation is probably not the best thing. You know, we communicate, 90% of the stuff of how we communicate is through body language and tone and things like that. So I think you're absolutely right. Maybe do it when you're having a good time. And sometimes people don't want to do that because they want to screw up the bad time by bringing up something heavy. But that really sometimes is the best time to do it.
Well, and also remember, everybody, that this kind of conversation, the difficult conversations, build a new layer of intimacy into relationships. You're not going to ruin your relationship with your sister by being honest about who you are. Because if you try and maintain a relationship by saying, I'm not going to rock the boat, I'm not going to bring up how I feel, you are going to damage the relationship because you're going to feel different about it. But if you really honor this relationship, which obviously you do, you're going to share of yourself, and you're going to bring a new dynamic, which is we get to be honest with each other. What a relief. Like, there are Todd and then about three really good friends of mine. They know that I would say something if there was a problem, which means that 99% of the problem or time when there is no problem, they can really rest easy with me because they know I'm not carrying anything. I would say it if I had something to say. And actually, that's probably true with most people. It's definitely true with everybody I'm close to. I would tell. So what that does is it builds in this intimate part of, into your relationship where they trust you fully and they're not trying to figure out what you feel. They just know because you would tell them if you felt otherwise. Like Todd knows if I'm in a good mood, I'm in a good mood. There's nothing I'm hiding. I'm not like waiting to spring something on him. If I really have something to say, I will. And I think that helps, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and vice versa.
I like it when you're in a good mood.
I know.
Good moods are awesome.
I love good moods too.
Bad moods equal.
Not always.
No, not always. Oh, not always. I mean, no way, man. Okay. So any follow-up, Anna, or what are you thinking?
No, that's good. Thank you. That was really helpful. And, you know, sometimes it's just like I feel better even just saying it, and I feel more confident in what I think my approach, because we do, like, her and I actually get along really, really well. It's just, and the thing is what you were saying, Kathy, like the story I tell myself, like I've been telling myself that too, because I'm like, I know a lot of this is just in my head being like, you know, it could just literally be a coincidence that every single time we're going to do something, like something happens, because it's not often, it's not like it's every week, it's like once every few months, and it just happens that every, I don't know, but I'm like, I know it's like 90% in my head, but I'm like, I don't, like you said, I would, it's better to just approach it and deal with it than like make it worse.
And can you look at this as an opportunity to deepen your relationship with your sister-in-law? Like, is the universe conspiring to deepen your relationship? And the only way to do, like, you can like kick the can down the road, because it takes work to have this conversation with your sister-in-law. But if you can get through this, this is why Kathy and I have a really good relationship, is we have these difficult conversations together. And if you can do that, it will completely connect you guys on a much deeper level, because you will have gone through this kind of icky situation and you end up stronger on the other side of it.
And then the last thing I'll share, which opens up a can of worms, but well, I'll just let one worm out. Just one worm.
Uno.
Or just uno worm. Is that a lot of times something that really triggers us, yes, her behavior is a real thing and she, by canceling, affected you and you're disappointed. All those things are real. I'm not saying they're not real, but they also may be an old pattern that you experienced with somebody else, with a family member, with a friend, with school, with your childhood, because a lot of what I get most frustrated at and triggered at, if it be Todd or friends or whoever, is a feeling of not being heard or not, or a feeling of disregard. And so it brings up more than just the present moment in me, it brings up my history. And that's usually why something circulates around. And then here's the beautiful thing, Anna. Life gives us many chances to heal things. And so if this is swirling around in your head a lot and you're trying to create a story around it and you're like, I shouldn't be mad, but I should, your life is giving you this opportunity to do this in a different way. So maybe historically you would have said, I'm going to be quiet because it's not worth it and I don't want to rock the boat. And now you're being given an opportunity to do this compassionately and do this with authenticity and with your feet on the ground, with no intention to change anyone or harm anyone, no need to win. You're just going to share of yourself, and damn, it feels good. I mean, it just is the best thing ever.
Well, and just for kicks, Anna, I'll email you, because when I do these men's groups, like this was what we talked about for 2 hours. I send out minutes, which basically gives resources and explanations of what we were trying to convey. It may not click with you, but just in case, I'll send it to you just so you can read where I got some of the ideas, and there's some videos there that kind of deepen the understanding. And if it doesn't work for you, just delete it and forget I ever sent it. So just remind me to do that.
All right, let's do the next question. Well, let's make sure, does anybody here who's live have a question either?
Or want to add to Anna's situation.
Or want to add to Anna's situation.
Which we always love. Just raise your hand or not.
Okay. Wait, Jennifer has something.
Oh, okay. Let's do this. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I wanted to just add something to Anna's. What happens if you have a situation like this? I have a situation that's really, really similar with my sister-in-law, but we don't really have a good relationship. I mean, we aren't very connected, and I've tried to connect with her, and it seems like that's just not something she wants to do, which you know, it hurts my feelings, obviously, but she doesn't want to connect with my kids or any of us. So I try to plan things and she either says no, or she cancels, or she's like, you know, she criticizes because I have three boys and she has two girls, and she'll say things like, only boys want to do that stuff, or things like that. So in those cases, like, do you give up the dialogue because the person, like, I feel bad giving up because it's family, but at the same time, having an authentic conversation with her doesn't work.
Right.
So, so that's kind of my question about that. But Anna, I just want to say to you that I think that it's awesome that you're so self-aware in this situation and that you really understand what's going on with you and that you are making the effort to have that relationship with your sister-in-law instead of just being angry and, you know, blowing her off. Like, that's really brave. So I just want to compliment you on that.
Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you, Jennifer, for saying that, because I agree. This would be my thought on that. This is a very personal decision because you, again, this is going to be a self-awareness thing for you, Jennifer, because it depends. I will go back to what I was saying to Anna about that really this isn't about having a back and forth conversation that is necessarily successful. It's not about, even though the icing on the cake is it can make a relationship more deep and intimate. Those are icing things. But the bottom line is the first and foremost thing is the self-betrayal issue. Does not speaking up feel like a self-betrayal? Mm-hmm. If it does, that's your answer, which is I need to say this. And I'm still going to say it in a compassionate way, even if it doesn't change our relationship. I just need to say it because I'm feeling it, not because my ego needs to win, but because I want it. You know, because sometimes in a relationship, there's someone who's like, I'm not going to do this. That's only what boys want to do, blah, blah, blah. And they're very definitive about that's the end, period. And I used to, historically, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to dive in there. And now I'll say, yeah, I hear you. I look at it this way, but I understand where you're coming from. And to me, that has been my path of not betraying myself. There's been situations that I've shared with Todd that still bother me from history where people were saying things like the story I always tell about how I was with all those people who were saying that Saturday Night Live wasn't a live show. And I knew it was, and I know everything, not everything. I don't know everything, but I know a lot about entertainment and I know a lot about, or people will say this person sings this song and I know it's not true, but I'll just stay there and I'll be quiet. And again, you can see these are not important things, but I wouldn't say anything. And it started to feel like a self-betrayal. And let me even get deeper. There was a time when I was much younger and I'd be dating, you know, guys, and they would say something and I wouldn't want to correct them because I wouldn't want to offend their ego.
Ooh. Because you're a woman, sweetie.
Yes. And I remember those times. They're ingrained in my body. They are lodged in my body because I quieted myself. And those are very small things, but they add up to big things because they became self-betrayal. And there was obviously some things that became bigger than just the entertainment industry that I wasn't commenting on. So now I don't do that anymore. I try not to. I do my best. And so Jennifer, that's your question is, do you feel like you're self-betraying or are you at peace with the way things are with your sister-in-law where you're like, it's not that she's not worth your energy, but you're like, I don't feel like I'm self-betraying. I really don't have much to say. This is just the way it is. Cause I can say I have relationships like that too, where I'll be, you know, like some of when I'm with a group of girlfriends and I'll come home and I'll be like, this person said this and this and this and this. And I didn't even get fazed by it. I didn't need to add my two cents because I didn't feel like it necessitated my two cents. And I didn't feel like I was betraying myself. So, and you know, here's the thing, Jennifer, it might not be just about her. It might be different times with her. Sometimes you do need to say something. Sometimes you don't. And there isn't a good or bad or right or wrong.
Two things. One, I'm going to share two Wayne Dyer quotes because Wayne is one of my favorite, most important early teachers. And one is just about judgment. When you judge another, you do not define them, you define yourself. So that's one thing. We all judge people, but really it's just a projection of our own stuff. But the second one's kind of silly and funny, but also interesting. And I guess I just want to say to Anna, you have a sister-in-law that you get along with who you love. Poor Jennifer over here has...
Well, not poor, but Jennifer, yeah.
Jennifer.
I don't like her work.
She knows. Look at her. Look at her face. She knows what I mean. She's got a sister-in-law that's just not as easy.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to say to Anna is focus on the fact that you have this really good relationship. But this is kind of the funny thing, and this is maybe more for Jennifer. This is Wayne Dyer's quote. Friends are God's way of apologizing for your family. And I think,
but not my Aunt Peg.
But not Aunt Peg.
My Aunt Peg's the best.
But she's, because she's awesome. But it's funny, like, it's once again the paradox. We talked about paradoxes on tomorrow's podcast, which you guys will hear. You know, do you stop at all costs and do anything you can to make sure that family is this family unit? Yes. Well, at the same time, do you sometimes let family members go in their direction and you don't have as much in common with them and detached with love? Yes.
Sure.
You don't have to be best friends with your family.
No, you don't. You have to be respectful and thoughtful, and there's an honor that goes with family, but that doesn't mean you have to invite them over all the time. It doesn't mean that you have to do everything they say. It doesn't mean that you have to be best friends. There is a place that is, especially when, you know, like I'm thinking of when there's challenging family issues that, you know, Todd and I have dealt with.
We've had plenty.
And, you know, there's boundaries and all that kind of thing, but with honor, with respect. Like, again, the key is it's like so much deeper than the answer that we're going to give, because the answer, it's hard to touch on this. It's, are you coming from a place of win-lose? Are you coming from a place of right-wrong? Or are you coming from a place of, regardless of all that, this is just something I need to say? Or regardless of all that, I don't need to say a thing and I can be at peace with what just happened. Mm. And that's why there's no right answer. That's why there's a self-awareness piece in here where you got to feel it in yourself. And the key is, there's always going back. So sometimes I've been in a situation where I haven't said something, I realized I should have, and I can always readdress it. Okay. So if I'm not sure if I should say something, sometimes, you know, I remember Oprah used to always say, doubt means don't. Mm. You know, if I'm not sure, sometimes I just don't, but then I can reapproach it later.
Well, and this is, we didn't get around to talking about this on tomorrow's podcast, but we really wanted to. There's a David Brooks article in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And it's called How to Engage a Fanatic. Mm-hmm. So this is an extreme example, because he's had people like hating him because of some of the things he's written. And it's really, I don't know, it's nothing new, but it's just another important reminder of how do we, you know, with family members who we think are just really challenging. How do
you
we
were
do
gonna
that?
Say nuts and I you was didn't gonna say because nuts. Of me. See, that's sweet.
Well, why is it because of you?
Was it because of me or no? Because
no,
I thought you knew I'd give you a hard time.
Right, because that nuts is sometimes not good for people with mental illness.
Correct. That's why.
So I'm trying to be politically correct.
Or inclusive language.
Or inclusive language person.
PC is starting to get thrown around as like a negative.
Yeah.
You know, and really it's not.
So just if you're interested in reading that article, just Google How to Engage a Fanatic, New York Times, David Brooks.
Or we'll send it with the email.
Yeah, I'll write that down.
We'll send it so you guys can read it. Because even though it's more extreme, we're not talking about sisters-in-laws or family members. When we have different perspective, how do we engage with people who have a different perspective?
My nose is sore. I'm coming up.
Okay. Well, if you're coming off, I'm coming off.
Ah. My nose. Owie.
So are we going to be able to wear these tomorrow?
Yeah. For a half an hour. Okay. That's my max.
All right. So next question.
This is an email question because we don't have any other live questions, at least not yet.
Okay.
So this is, my husband and I have two little guys. A one-year-old and a four-year-old. Like so many people with young kids, it has added a whole new layer to our relationship. We haven't talked about this yet, have we? Does this ring a bell to you?
I don't know.
Our strengths are stronger, but on the flip side, our weaknesses are magnified. I find that we have created a way of communicating that I would best describe as high conflict. Mm. We haven't talked about this yet. We tend to bicker a lot about both the mundane and the big things. I noticed that my in-laws, another in-law question. Mm-hmm. I noticed that my in-laws have this dynamic, and I'm sure it's a learned way of communicating for my husband. I find it so difficult to not be triggered when we're together. I'm finding the added stress of having young kids makes it more challenging for me not to be reactive. Any advice?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to start?
Yes.
Okay. So the two things that come to mind is, first of all, it's just good to recognize that bickering is a dynamic, and it's not, oh, this is just how we are, or we can't help it, because of course you can help it, but is it challenging because is it become the norm? And as you've already pointed out, it is something that was maybe learned or experienced in childhood as being the norm. And so is that how we relate to relationships where we're like, unless we're bickering, we're not dealing with things. There's a lot of stories, talk about stories we create in our mind about bickering is necessary. Oh, you know, it's just like people saying it's necessary for me to shame my child or else they wouldn't do this. And that's a story we've created. That's not necessarily true. It's just what we've been telling ourselves. So the first reckoning, you know, realization you've already made, which is, I don't like this dynamic. It's about stupid stuff. It's about mundane things. And I was listening to Rob Bell's podcast. He was talking about ambition. Oh, it was so good. So I highly recommend, you guys, if you don't know Rob Bell, he was our speaker at our conference last year, and he has a podcast called The Robcast, and he just has such a good way with words and explaining things. And he was talking about ambition, and he was talking, that's a whole nother thing. You know, he does a great job with that. But one of the things that he mentions is that when people have a lot of pent up energy about other things, things that they're not expressing, or creativity that's going unused, that's a Brené Brown thing where creativity can metastasize, you know, or not using our creativity can become something else. When we're not dealing with things, maybe at work or with our friendships, we end up doing things like getting angry on Facebook. And we put all of our, you know, energy into, like, I'm going to get mad on social networking and I'm going to come back with the best response. And even worse, a lot of times we put all that pent up energy or lack of play and lack of creativity into our arguments with the ones we love most. It's because we don't feel like we're winning or utilizing our energy in a good way in other areas, we take it out on the people we love most. And just knowing that, like, there's all these, before we figure out how to communicate in a different way, we have to recognize, why am I doing this? Is this really healthy? No. Is this how I want to communicate? Is this how I want to teach my kids how to communicate? And those things are the start, because you have to have an intention before you shift a dynamic. You have to understand why you're shifting this dynamic. Once you have that, this is the beautiful part. It only takes one person to shift a dynamic.
It takes two people to fight and one person to stop it.
Exactly. The imagery that we may have used on Zen Talks, I can't remember when we used it. I think we used it at a talk a couple weeks ago, but it's about that tension of a rope. When two people are fighting, one person's on one end and one person's on the other end, and you're pulling at each other like tug of war, right? And tug of war is about who's going to like pull it harder. That's a fight, or that's a bickering relationship. If you drop the rope, well, there's no tension. You can't. And again, I'm simplifying.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, you have to...
Because some people will drop the rope saying, aren't I better than you for dropping the rope?
Which is why I started by saying intention is so important, because this is not a win-lose thing.
Yes.
This is not, I'm going to drop the rope so you fall on your ass and look like a jerk.
Yeah.
That's not why we're dropping the rope, because that's an ego-driven need. Mm-hmm. And we've all done that before, you know, where we've been like, well, I'm going to say this. And actually... Cameron's been doing this face lately when I've told her no about things, you know, like, no, we're not going to do that, or no, we can't do that. She'll go, oh, okay.
Yeah. She does that to me a lot. It's usually about technology.
I know. And it kind of cracks me up, where I'm not laughing at her, but I know what she's doing.
It's
it's
a seventh grade look.
It's kind of like a, oh, right. Yeah, kind of like I'm crazy.
Yeah. She's surprised and she thinks we're crazy.
Right. And so I've kind of now, I don't mention it in that moment because she's in a high tension moment, but like, you know, when she and I were hanging out this weekend, she said something and I go, okay. And she goes, what are you doing? I go, that's what you do to me when I tell you no about stuff. And then she laughed, because not because I'm on to her, but because she saw herself, and she's going to do it again, by the way. And I'm not going to make fun of her, but I'm just demonstrating that I'm noticing what she's doing.
You're holding a mirror to that seventh grade face.
And I did it too. In seventh grade, we'd be like, all right.
I was the biggest smartass ever.
I know. So that's what you've told me, which is so interesting.
I was.
I know.
I don't know why. I just, that's how I dealt with things.
I know.
I still kind of am, but it's not as bad.
Well, you were Chandler Bing. You used humor to deflect your feelings.
Yes. Oh, I love deflecting feelings.
I know. I love Chandler.
It's the best.
Chandler's my favorite character, maybe, which is why I wanted to be with Todd, because he reminded me of Chandler. And you know, Chandler and Monica started dating at the same time we started dating, and they got engaged the same year we got engaged. But I'm not Monica. I kind of Monica.
Well, you were doing this at the kitchen table or our dining room table, and Monica had some OCD qualities. Mm-hmm. You're not OCD, but if there's crumbs on this table,
bothers me. So I have a little bit of Monica. You know, but just not a heavy amount.
No. We were going to talk about.
Are we done with that question?
Yeah, because she's not on, so I don't know how to follow it up.
Well, the last. Let me just follow it up with this one thought. As far as shifting the dynamic, well,
she's being reactive. What are some things we could tell her to not react?
Breathe.
Decide.
Here's a statement that I have written down in a few places. Do it differently this time. That's one statement. So if you feel like bickering is your constant go-to, I'm going to do it differently this time. That's one thing.
Or do the opposite.
Yes, that's it. You know, I'm going to do the opposite thing. You know, I'm going to pull a George Costanza. Or I get to choose. And that doesn't mean I get to win. It means my next thing I say, I get to choose. And when people say to me, I couldn't help it, I can't help yelling at my kids, I can't help bickering, yes, you can. And even though I understand it's difficult, I understand it's not easy, and I live it too. I would much prefer to just, if I was on autopilot, I'd be fighting back all the time. But you're not on autopilot. You guys are conscious beings with the ability to notice your thoughts. We've evolved to a place where we get to see what we're thinking. We know what we're thinking, and we're separate from our thoughts. Mm-hmm. So we do get to choose, but it's a practice and it's a muscle.
Anna says that she loves the circles from our conference last year. Mm. What are those circles?
Mm. You know, I don't remember, Anna. I know one was Rob Bell. This is where I start. Mm-hmm. Was that one?
There was like seven of them.
So basically what we did is every speaker that we had, yeah, one of their favorite quotes, this is where I start. Was Rob Bell. It was my favorite quote from him in his book, How to Be Here. And so we had that on everybody's chairs so they could take that. And then we had one from Ali, and then we had one from Rosalind, but I don't remember what they are.
You guys don't know this yet, but we, on tomorrow's podcast, we are doing a Zen class. And it's about civil communication.
Civil and compassionate communication, what we were just talking about with you guys.
So we're going to do that on, I think, Monday, November 20th. It's Monday before Thanksgiving. But the good news is anybody who's a Team Zen member doesn't have to pay. All the other suckers have to pay $20.
It's free for you guys.
So a bunch of non-suckers here.
Yes, non-suckers.
Everybody else, suckers.
That's right. And then it ends up just being them. Everybody gets it for free. That's all right. I don't care. As long as we're all together, it's good.
So we're just trying to add value to you guys, because we love everybody, but especially love you guys.
You win.
Jennifer has a question. What do you got?
All right. So I had a situation with my kids, and I kind of feel like it's an ongoing situation about discipline, because I guess what I'm struggling with is, you know, I'm trying to be the conscious, available parent, not the parent that just punishes the kids when they do something. I'm trying to talk about things when they happen and kind of have everybody express how they feel and then hope that change comes from that. I'm finding lately, it seems like my kids are taking advantage of that. It feels like my kids are, and again, this is the story. They have not copped to this, okay? So this is the story, and maybe they're too smart to cop to this, but the story I have is that they're thinking, all right, you know what? She's just going to want to talk this out, so we'll just bear through the family discussion. We'll all say, yeah, 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 we hear you, right, we'll do better, and we'll move on to the next thing. And that there's not enough of a consequence. But because my kids are older, I mean, there's certain things we could take away. Like in this one situation, I took my son's cell phone away simply because I felt like he had to like get his head back on straight. Like I felt like he had to sit with some of what we discussed instead of just going and numbing out to his phone. Mm-hmm. But I guess, so I don't feel like I'm being permissive, but I don't feel like, I don't know, maybe, it's not that I don't think they take me seriously, because I know they take me seriously, but I feel like they just think, like, she's so nice, she'll talk to us about it, and we'll move on, and it'll be fine. And so the other day when we had this incident where I went out for the night and my husband was traveling and my sister was babysitting, who, first things first, I'm firing my sister because she's a horrible babysitter. And I told her that. But I specifically laid out the expectations of what everyone needed to do while I was gone, when everybody needed to be in bed, blah, blah, blah. Come home at 10:15 and everyone's awake as if like it's no big deal. No one did their chores. No one's ready for bed. It was like a freaking free for all. So I got pissed and I flipped out at everybody. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, this is not acceptable. This isn't how we deal as a family. Like, well, we don't fulfill our responsibilities to each other. The whole family falls apart. And what if you couldn't count on me to do all the things I do for you? So we had this big discussion, but I'm not sure it's any different from the discussions I've had before. So I kind of feel like some of these issues just, they're not going to go away. So is it a long-term view or am I doing something wrong?
Good question.
What a great question. Love it.
I can't wait to find out
what the answer is. Yeah. I struggle with the same stuff.
So Jennifer, first of all, no, they're not all going to go away and they never will. Even if you did the exact right and said the most perfect thing and Eckhart Tolle was your, you know, husband and you guys were saying the most zen and perfect thing, they would still sometimes not follow through with what they said they were going to do. Why? Because they're human beings. So that's the first thing. And that is in no way saying, so forget about it. I'm going on to the next thing. But that's one thing is I think something we say a lot on the show is sometimes we'll say, kids, put your, you know, this is a metaphor for everything. Kids, put your shoes away. And they may do it, but then they'll forget. And then 2 years later, you realize you've been telling your children to put their shoes away for the last 2 years. And you're like, I must be doing something wrong. Versus people and human beings don't always put their shoes away. And I mean, right now, if we took this up to our bedroom, I didn't make my bed today. I don't know about you guys, but there are, and I'm not saying that means we let them off the hook. Let me finish this whole thought and then you, okay?
Go ahead.
And then the other thing is sometimes when we leave a situation where, especially you have a babysitter and your kids are supposed to do things, because I do the exact same thing you do, you know, here's the expectations for the night. There's a control issue involved of I controlled this situation. And when I come home, I expect it to unfold the way that I said. And this isn't because you're a controlling person or I'm a controlling person, but our expectation was this. When our expectation is not met, we see red. Like the first impulse is you didn't hear me. You didn't respect me. And so what's interesting is like, and again, it sounds like your conversation with them was great, but it's really not about you guys did this and so the family fell apart. It's when I come home and I see you didn't do anything, what that tells me is you didn't hear me. What that tells me is that I'm not communicating in a way that you can understand. So instead of making it about the whole and that because they didn't do what they did, the family's going to have problems and the world's going to fall apart, it's how it makes you feel. Because this is a thing that'll shift someone's behavior. Is the relationship suffering because of it? Because something I say to my girls a lot, and you don't use that as a shame tactic, like my relationship with you is suffering. You don't say it like that. I say things like when my girls, I'll give you a real example. My oldest daughter is now staying out later and she is just staying at people's houses. It's not like she's walking around downtown at 11 o'clock, but I've said to her, you have to text me and tell me where you are so I can rest, so I can go to bed. And there were like two or three times, because it was new, where she wasn't texting me. And I was texting her and saying, where are you? And then finally, like 15 minutes later, she'd be like, oh, well, I'm at Mary's. Kind of like, it's no big deal, I'm at Mary's. And when she came home, I said, listen, this is not about me trying to be micromanaging of your life. But when you're not telling me where you are, I can't sleep. And then there's this trust that breaks down between us where I don't even know if this is a good idea. I said, so communicating with me is not about me controlling your life. It's about us, me knowing where you are. And if that's done, then everything's cool. And so it's kind of the same thing with you. Like when I'm leaving the house, I need to know that certain things are going to happen. And if they don't, I want you to know how it affects me and affects us together. And also at the same time, and then I'm done, knowing that it's not going to work out sometimes. That, you know, I can't tell you how many times we've had a babysitter and we've come home and our children are not even close to being in bed.
Or like last night. Kathy, for the last year, has been on this thing, well, not year, it's more like last 15 years, at the end of the day, we kind of like to start with a clean slate in the morning. So that doesn't mean, that means potato chips are not on the table and shoes are not on the couch.
Struggle.
And, you know, it just, that's Kathy's deal. Like, it doesn't matter to me, but. Let's start fresh. So last night, World Series, awesome game. And we let the girls stay up later. And then it was 10:30. And our middle daughter, Cameron, God bless her, she left two open applesauce containers on the table and a bag of pretzels. Now, it doesn't sound like a big deal, except for the fact that Kathy's been reminding everybody in this family, including me, can we just start with a clean slate in the morning and just put the crap away?
And it's not a chore. Put away what's yours. It's personal responsibility. It's not, I left a bunch of mess. It's your job to clean it up. That's your applesauce. That's your pretzels.
So what did you do?
I said, come downstairs, please.
Cameron, get down here. That's what you said.
I did.
And she's like, why? I said, you said, because your stuff's all
over. And I was like, applesauce.
But you did it.
Pretzels.
Now, Kathy was in a good mood.
Yeah.
So she kind of did it in a lighthearted, silly, funny way. You know, if anger worked, I think we would use it more often. It just simply isn't that useful of a vehicle for communication. The other thing I want to say, Jennifer, is get an upfront agreement. And that sounds kind of very official. But, you know, guys, when I come home, I just want to make sure that you guys know that this, this, and this is done. And if that doesn't happen, then we're not going to be able to do this, this, and this. That way they kind of know what's going on. And you can enact that discipline with love, saying, okay, well, we're not going to have cell phones until tomorrow at 7 o'clock because this was what we decided to do. So, because otherwise, yeah, kids are going to take the path of least resistance in so many different ways. Maybe it's because their brain's not developed. Maybe it's because they're not, you know, these kids are mindful. And what I mean by that is they're in the present moment. They're not thinking about mom in an hour. They're thinking about watching this show right now.
And the one thing I would say is I hear what you're saying because she was saying she's done cell phones, but I don't necessarily connect the cell phone with, I don't know if that's a natural consequence, like to say, if you don't do this.
So what would a natural consequence be for the way she got her home, the way she came home?
Her disappointment. Her, like, the fact that we have to have another conversation about this.
But what's the consequence?
The relationship. I know, and this is the thing. This is, as you can tell, he and I talk about this all the time. What we want is this clean thing that works, that every time we say it, they do it.
I love
There's
that.
No such thing.
Let's do that. I want to do that.
There's no such thing. Now, you may have developed something over time where there, it, like, for example, there is, you know, there are some things where first this, then that. If this doesn't get done, we're not going to Great America. You have to do the laundry before we go to Great America. There are plenty of things that Todd and I have said, no, we can't do this now because this didn't get done. I'm not saying we just glide through life and say, oh, my relationship's being damaged. And we never, it's not that, but there's got, what affects them is reminding them to be accountable. And that when they're not accountable, this is interesting because this kind of goes to what Anna's, you know, question was at the beginning. Her sister-in-law is not doing anything wrong. And I'm just using her as like an example. But a lot of times when people aren't told how they're affecting other people, they never learn to take into account other people. And we don't have to play the role of mom and dad and be like authoritarian and forceful. We get to be other people. So when my children leave their food out, when I've told them 10 times since they were born, before you go to bed, put away your stuff. The thing that happens is, A, you have to get out of bed and come do it. And I do it with humor. Pretzels, applesauce, I follow them to the garbage doing this. We laugh about it, but they get it done. Now go to bed. And then the next night, they're like, got my applesauce. Like, and they'll drop the ball again in a month. That's the thing, is it's not about.
Or in a day.
Or in a day. But a lot of times, haven't you seen the development? I mean, I know you have.
Yeah, because two steps forward, three steps back, yeah. Four steps forward. It's continuous ebb and flow.
We all still have ingrained in our cellular memory authoritarian parenting, okay? All of us feel like if our children are not responding like that, that maybe we should just go back. Maybe we should just yell our heads off, scare the crap out of them, and then we're going to get some things done. You can, like, in no way is it's like if you're on Team Zen, you can't do that. You can do whatever you need to do in your family. I'm not, you know, it's not like you're bad for doing it, but I think you will find that it doesn't, not only does it not change behavior, but it damages your relationships where then they can't even hear you. And so you've not only created a situation where they're annoyed at you and fearful of you, but it's very hard to reach them then. It's very hard to say something like, I'm feeling disappointed, because they're scared of you. And then they may put away their shoes because they're afraid of you. But when they go to the next person's house, they haven't integrated putting away their shoes. That's just a dumb metaphor. Yeah.
Okay. It's not dumb.
Well, you know, putting away your shoes is not a tragic outcome, or not putting away your shoes. But so, Jennifer, your question is, am I doing something wrong? I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I think that what it is it's continuous. And so what you're saying is, do I have to do this again? Yes. You have to have the conversation again. You have to tell them that you get exasperated. Is that the right word? Exasperated.
Yeah, exactly.
You get that this is tiring. I mean, I say to my girls all the time, oh my God, this is tiring. And I'm not trying to, it just is how I really feel. I'm tired of saying this, but I will say it again.
You know what my mom did?
What?
God bless my mom. Rest in peace. But when she was like, when her world sucked, because my dad wasn't helping at all, and my brother was getting in trouble, she would sometimes scream at the top of her lungs. It wasn't funny at all. Like, I have like baggage because of it. But she would scream, I have no life. And it was awful.
Because she's saying, because of you people,
yes.
I have no life.
Yes, it was awful.
Like in Parenthood. Do you guys see the movie Parenthood? Remember Diane Weist's character? And she has Martha Plimpton's her daughter. And then Martha Plimpton makes some snide comment about her having a vibrator or something. It's something, you know.
Yes.
And she goes to her room and she's like, you know why I have that? Because I have no life.
Yes, she's channeling my mom.
She's like, your dad left to have a party.
And I was staying to raise two kids.
And that we think we're somehow teaching them something. And really, we gave them.
Yeah, she passed her bags down to me.
Yeah, and
I'm going to love her for it.
Yeah, well, it's not.
Because you know what? She didn't really have much of a life.
She
worked two jobs chasing after three kids with a husband that was not easy to be with. And she wasn't perfect either, but, you know.
She did her best, man.
She did her best.
You know what Tad's mom used to always say? She'd say, I worked my butt off and I got them well-educated, which she did. And she said, and that's so they could get jobs and pay for their own therapy. You know, she was like, I am single focused on their education. And she would say this today if she was still here. She was hilarious about it. She goes, I knew they were going to need therapy for what they saw. But she's like, I either was going to deal with this or deal with this.
Yeah.
And she chose that. And I love that about your mom. Like,
yeah.
I honor that. And she raised three wonderful children
who
have all probably needed a little support, which we all do
every month.
Yeah,
I talk to my guy.
Yeah.
So it's an hour in. Okay. Is there any announcements? I just want to say hello to Miona. Miona, is that how you say your name?
Yes, that is.
Miona. Okay, welcome. You're brand new, at least to the live thing, right?
Yes.
Where are you from?
I just came on, so it's only 10 minutes.
It's okay.
But I always listen to you guys later on, so
I'm so glad.
I don't feel like I'm.
And where are you from?
I live in Lake Placid, upstate New York.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
I'm originally from Serbia. I always say when people ask me, where are you from? I always say, do you got 5 minutes? Cause I'm all over. I'm from Serbia originally, but I moved to the States in 2007.
Nice.
So I lived in Virginia for 12 years. I'm in Lake Placid, upstate New York now since June. Yeah.
You are a global citizen.
Yes.
You are from many places. I love that. I love people. See, and it's funny, Miona, because I am, I feel worldly because of what I do, you know, with mindfulness and everything, but I've lived in Illinois my whole life and I've gotten to travel some, but I've always lived in Chicago. So I love being with people who have lived in different places in the United States and around the world because they give me an added perspective. So,
Miona, question, but you want to be respectful of time. So maybe next time. Does that sound good, Miona?
Yes, because and I sent you an email earlier. So if you do, if you have time, you can just respond to an email or we can tackle it next live video. That's fine.
One way or the other.
Sometimes we do both. Sometimes we write something and then we'll end up talking about it too to clarify. So.
All right.
Yeah, that's just one of the many things that I wanted to ask you guys.
We're glad you're here. That's what it's here for. So.
No announcements or anything?
Just that, like we said, we have a few things. You know, we're doing the Zen class, which is November 20th. We have Some local things, but not everybody here is local. And then obviously you guys got our email about milk being at our conference.
I got something. Okay. So the woman who created the Mask You Live In documentary is having a Facebook Live event on Tuesday, I think. Tuesday, November 7th at 7 o'clock. You can watch it for free. The Mask You Live In is a wonderful documentary about healthy masculinity. And I'm actually doing something at the library in Elmhurst. But for those of you who are not here and you want to host an event with your friends or just with your kids or your husband, you can watch it free on Facebook Live. So.
And it's for kids 11 and above, boys and girls. I mean, we don't have to be so gender specific about these things. Like it's, and I'm saying that to myself, not to you guys. Like sometimes I'm like, all boys need to see this. I'm like, girls do too. We need to understand the you know, traumas that young boys experience too, and the challenges they are confronting in society. And it helps us get a better understanding of why these things like Me Too is a real thing. Because a lot of the messages that boys get really early lead to that. And so it's about having compassion and understanding we can make a shift as parents. So
that's all I got.
All right. Well, happy Halloween. Get a costume on tomorrow. Don't forget, because Halloween's awesome. And you got to eat candy. Don't be like, I don't eat candy. Eat candy. Just have one.
Kathy actually has almost no rules on Halloween regarding how much candy our kids ingest.
2 days of the year, Easter and candy, I lay off. Easter and Halloween. They can have as much as they want. And I don't say a thing. And they get like, usually on Halloween, JC doesn't anymore, but one of them gets sick to their stomach. And I don't say, I told you so, like, na, na, na. But I say, well, that's what happens when you eat a lot of candy. Like,
I think it's funny you just said na, 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 because Anna just said she's going to be a banana on Halloween.
Banana, na, na, na. I love banana costumes. My friend Jessica has a banana costume, and she's gone as a banana more than once. And one time we were out, this was before Todd and I were together, and Jessica was dressed as a banana, and we ran into a bunch of Todd's friends, and they were dressed as bananas, but Jessica was the better banana. So,
well, because her costume was perfect, and my buddy's costumes had, like, bruises in it.
They were, like, rotten bananas.
Yeah, because they're rotten kids.
Yeah. Anna's not a rotten banana. She's a healthy, good banana.
Yeah, but sometimes when the bananas are brand new from the store, it's no good.
I like them.
They're
like
all
that.
Green and you can barely get the peel
it's
off.
It's like hard to bite into them, yeah.
And then you get the mushy bananas.
Perfect in-between banana. Hard to find.
Yeah.
But when you do, you got to lean into that joy.
I like Chiquita myself.
Are there any others?
That's the only one I know.
Okay, so Anna, enjoy being a Chiquita banana. And everybody, happy Halloween, and we love you, and thank you.
Keep trucking. Peace and love,
peace
my friends.
Love.
Adios.
Bye-bye.